laws that we have.
Y lo que es la historia de Ayotzinapa fue fundada hace muchos años
was that it was
con esa finalidad.
Founded many years ago with that goal in mind.
Well, what are you hoping now that the United States government or could do to be able to assist you in finding a solution to what has happened to your son and to the other youths?
Pues el gobierno y se tienta un poco el corazón y pueda hacer una presión hacia nuestro gobierno.
The government of the United States will open its heart and put some pressure on the Mexican government. And at the same time, there are parents here in the United States that are doing some conferences at schools.
Y de esa manera hacer más presión al gobierno mexicano.
To bring to light this case so that there is more pressure on the Mexican government so there's a solution. At the same time, we have also, the mother of my child was one of the people who went to Geneva, the United Nations, to build international pressure. That is really the only way that we can attain a resolution.
Pues la invitación que
so this is the invitation we make
a los americanos
to
para
our
que se den cuenta
American
del problema que está pasando en nuestro México.
So they know the problem that's happening
le agradecemos
in our country, Mexico.
And
we appreciate it. We're so thankful.
And your final message here, Antonio.
Pues yo, mi mensaje.
My message.
Pues como padre,
well, as a father,
les doy las gracias
I thank
a todos.
Everyone.
Y no,
I thank everyone here.
No se olviden de apoyarnos.
Please don't forget to
Créame
support
que,
us. Believe me.
Es muy.
It is very.
Es muy difícil.
It is very difficult. The situation.
No se la recomiendo.
I would not.
A nadie.
I would not wish it
Gracias
upon anyone.
Por su apoyo.
Thank you for your support.
Antonio Tizapa is the father of Jorge Antonio Tizapa Legideño, one of the 43 students missing from the Mexican state of Guerrero since September. And Amado Tlatempa, the cousin of another missing student, Jesus Giovanni Rodriguez Tlatempa. The Mexican government's declared the students dead, saying they were attacked by local police and killed by a drug gang. A number of the parents of these students from Mexico are traveling in the United States in caravans, condemning the U.S. government for its role in the drug war. They believe the students are still alive. Special thanks to Alex Franco for the translation. This is Democracy Now!, Democracy Now!
All right, that was Democracy Now! Up next is Positively Revolting. It is 8:02. You are listening to KBOO Portland.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning. It is 4 minutes after 8 in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, KBOO Portland. This is Positively Revolting.
Yes,
and
it is.
I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are here this morning once again, turning our attention to the system of police brutality and killer cops. I said the system of police brutality because that's exactly what it is. It is intellectually dishonest at this time to frame this critical issue as a few rogue cops or some bad apples on the force. Violent cops are not few and far between, as propaganda tells us. They are, in fact, a cog in a wheel that is creating and reinforcing this society's inequalities. Cop violence is not an exception. It is, in fact, the underpinning of our racist, classist system. Joining us this morning to join in this conversation is Teresa Rayford. She's an organizer with Don't Shoot Portland and a community leader against police violence. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Ani.
Thank you so much for making the time to join us this morning on Positively Revolting. We're very happy to have you with us as we discuss yet the latest outrage and so many. And again, just another pebble on the heap that is a horrifying reality. At this time, the latest round of outrage began earlier this week in the case of the murder of Walter Scott in South Carolina. Things started pretty predictably. A black man is pulled over for a non-working brake light. At some point during the stop, Walter Scott leaves his vehicle, begins to run. The officer pursues him, chases him, and shoots him in the back 8 times, killing him. The officer handcuffs him. And again, this is all predictable and typical. This is what we have seen time after time. This is why I am making the argument. This is not an exception. We can't say, how did this happen? We know how it happened. And so the officer calls in with the very typical report that there was a struggle. He feared for his life. Walter Scott went for his taser. He was struggling for it. And so, of course, he had to shoot him several times and handcuff him.
From way far away.
What Michael Slager didn't know, the officer who murdered Walter Scott didn't know, was that this was being videotaped. And the videotape shows no struggle. The videotape shows Walter Scott running. And shows the officer shooting him in the back, then placing a stun gun, placing the taser next to him. So the thing that makes this really different is after that videotape came to light, Walter Scott, who had already been given a pass, these things happen. It's a tragic life being a cop. After the videotape comes to light, Walter Scott is fired from the police force and actually charged with murder. Michael Slater is actually charged with murder. And that is a pretty significant thing.
And a sad day when this is our good news.
I know, right? I want to sort of start our discussion there, Teresa. Can you give us your take on what we're seeing this week with this case?
From what I'm seeing, being on the inside and listening to all their rhetoric, it's that their training includes lying, along with an appropriate measure of documenting the lie and everybody else substantiating the lie. And what we received from this witness is the truth, and it's the truth that we can apply to several cases just like this one. And so, you know, while we've seen tragedy happen this past Saturday in the death of Walter Scott, we've also seen a revelation that they cannot hide from. I was in the COAB meeting yesterday, the Community Oversight and Accountability Board meeting, with DOJ and, you know, the Portland Police. The chief was there. All of these community members were there, the AMA pastors. Everybody's in the house. We're talking about excessive force. We're talking about a Department of Justice settlement for unnecessary use of deadly force. And not one time was Walter Scott's name mentioned. Not one time. And so there's becoming a complacency even regarding these lives, the lives of the people within the system of people that say they want to reform it. And I'm starting to get confused because my whole thought process the entire time I was there was Walter Scott, Walter Scott, Walter Scott. apply what just happened to everything that you guys are basically duty to do for this community to improve our public safety. Not one word.
Well, you know, I've got to agree. I was looking at the at our lovely neighborhood coffee shop. There was the New York Times this morning, and I'm, you know, waiting for my coffee. I thought, I'll just scan the front page of the New York Times. And they are trying to pass off, shooting is seen as crime strategy gone awry, the headline. And I thought, okay, what does this mean exactly? Was it Walter Scott's crime strategy to run away? What is the... And apparently, here's the aggressive tactics by North Carolina's mostly white police force, including frequent stops of drivers and pedestrians for minor violations and increased police high crime, mostly in black areas, have led to a decrease in violent crime. About weird double swing. I know, isn't that interesting? And then on page 13, they give us the little, little graphs and figures to show. So they are saying literally that it was, it's something that the residents had to sacrifice being harassed like that to get their crime rate down. That is the, and once again, Walter Scott's name is hardly mentioned.
It's sickening. It's PR. It's propaganda, and it's being used to basically numb us. And that's the general public. I mean, when people are talking about, why do they keep protesting? Why are the police officers still killing people? And why aren't people disgusted by their behavior? Why are we pointing our finger at the activists that are saying, you know, we have human rights and dignity, and all we want to do is improve our public safety, and making it seem like that's a criminal action? Like, that's sickening. And the people in our communities, I'm scared because the summer's coming up. And the stop status numbers are not going down because they're overrepresenting or harassing us in our communities. They're going up. They're sky high. They want us out by any means necessary. And when running from an officer becomes death.
that is now a capital offense. Well, or they were talking about that he was running because he owed $18,000 in back child support. And I'm thinking, still not a killing crime.
And
That's not death.
No, of course not.
Right. There is nothing that justifies shooting a man in the back eight times. There's just nothing that that justifies shooting a man in the back. I mean, there's really, this is criminal. And I think it's important to actually be outraged. And I think a lot of the time we start getting numbed out because of the sheer numbers of deaths by police. And I want to just look at April 4th. Last Saturday, there's a website called killedbypolice.net. Uh-huh. And on April 4th, we see in South Carolina, Walter Scott, age 50, was killed by the police. We also see four other men that were killed by the police. In Illinois, Justice Howell, 17, who is a black male. California, Paul Anthony Anderson, who was 31, black male. David Cody Lynch, 33, killed in Oklahoma. He was a white male. And Ethan Knoll, a white male, 34, killed in New Mexico. All on Saturday, April 4th.
Sickening.
And so we see it is nationwide. We see predominantly black men being killed. And we see a pattern of cop violence. If we go just flip forward to the next day, we have only one man being killed by the police. That was in Arizona. He's not identified over and beyond being a man. He was killed because he was the police were getting reports that this man was stabbing himself. And the police surrounded him as he was stabbing himself in a public place and shot him.
And kind of helped. Yep. Oh.
Again, you know, one has to really fight against getting numbed out in the face of these statistics, in the face of these stories. Every one of these statistics is a story. Every one of these statistics is a life that has been ended without judge or jury because a cop decided to pull the trigger or beat or choke their victim. And by and large, the cops do it with impunity. So that's the milieu in which we base our conversation. Teresa, you organize with Don't Shoot Portland. Can you let our listeners know a little bit about that group? Because as we know, this is pretty hard stuff, and the antidote to despair is action. So what is going on with Don't Shoot Portland?
Well, not only are we still out there and still active, we're growing our coalition of community partners in order to do more outreach. Quite recently, students over at Portland State University gave us a space in the green room down in their basement. So we're Cascadia and a lot of other activists were before us. So we have a managing space, an office inside of Smith Hall over there at Portland State, and we have access to 30,000 students, young minds, all looking for different, you know, majors and different career fields. So we want to apply consciousness to that. So we're very lucky. And we're just doing so much in the community. On Tuesday, we're going to be doing a protest at Multnomah County because a lot of these deaths, and I mean death by cop, we have the gang task force. We have the Multnomah County Health Department. Most of the services that are supposed to help improve our public safety issues come from that funding opportunity there in that building. We need to call out our leadership. We need to call out the people that are in our communities that are standing beside the police and not beside the people. There are no black leadership stating that they believe Black Lives Matter or that they're against police brutality. I was really sick during the Martin Luther King holiday season when every event that I went to, they paid honor and homage to our new chief and to our police force. It was crazy. They had no acknowledgement to the people that are out there on the front lines outside of promoting the movie Selma. And even after watching that movie, they still don't apply the actions of the people 50 years ago to the actions of our youth and people like myself today. So there's a serious disconnect, and I think that it is because of the numbing, or maybe it's because of complacency, but it seems like people are embarrassed to stand up for their rights, but we're not. We've been going back and forth to Salem since February. We'll continue up until July. We just had a grand jury training workshop with the Portland Law Collective, and Jennifer Williamson, who's a state rep, actually showed up, which was amazing to me. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're going to continue doing is our legal workshops, but we're also working on some youth symposiums for Know Your Rights training. One of the reasons that prompted us to continue the Know Your Rights training is because I had found out that the Portland Police and some of our faith-based organizations are going not only into the schools but in communities and basically giving the children the knowledge of Know Your Rights, but they're telling them, you have the right to remain silent. But if the cop asks you something, you need to give them the information that they need. And basically, in a nutshell, their training consists of the officers are already afraid of you when they approach you because you guys are criminals. So when they approach you, your job is to leave that situation alive. So you comply, you conform and you comply to whatever they ask you so that you can leave safe. Now, that is unconstitutional, and it's sickening that the police officers would push that type of leverage on children that live in communities that are plagued by poverty, and I'm sure they're not giving that same training to the ones in Hillsborough, Lake Oswego, Beaverton, or any of the surrounding suburbs where poverty is not as big of an issue as it is in my community. So we're staying active. We're staying super active because we have to, and I'm just hoping that our community wakes up and realizes that what we're doing is in regards to making sure that stop data information goes down. Those numbers have to go down, and there's nobody on the record talking about how to bring those numbers down. Everybody's talking about researching and surveys.
Right, because we don't have enough data yet. We don't have enough numbers.
We want to pay millions of dollars for Portland State and anybody else to get data so that we can know that there's a problem. We know there's a dang problem. We're burying people. Mm-hmm. We're burying Americans that are killed by our law enforcement. And that's a sickening thing. And those statistics on killed by cops, those are true statistics.
Right.
And those numbers are ridiculous. In the month of March, there were 111 people in this country unarmed that were killed by officers. That's crazy. In 1 month.
You know, it's almost time that we need to stop calling them law enforcement and start saying what that is, which is basically the police are the civilian army. They are the army to watch after us, especially black people, because to them, black lives don't matter. It's Jamila Bourdon last night was talking about the bottom line she thought was capitalism, but that's
it is.
Yeah, that it's a product. These are dispensable cogs in a wheel, worker wheel.
Well, it reinforces the inequalities. It reinforces and recreates the inequalities wherein, racism exists, wherein Black lives are really denigrated in this society, Black and brown lives, and we're also seeing, of course, mentally ill people and people in poverty being targeted for this sort of violence. And, it's sobering what you just said, Teresa, and I want to get back to that in just a minute about, children in, let's face facts, poor communities and communities of color being told that their job in a cop interaction is to stay alive. Isn't that the cops' job? Aren't they supposed to be protecting and serving? Of course not. That is not their job. That is, in fact, why we're doing the show and why we're outraged. But I'm just going to put it back there. Like, that really, at its face, makes no sense. I want to remind people you're listening to Positively Revolting. This is Talk Radio on KBOO, your community radio station. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can follow along on Facebook, where you can find us Positively Revolting. Or on Twitter, where we are Positive Revolt. And let's go ahead and take a caller. People have been gearing up. Francis, good morning. You're on the line. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. Thank you, Ms. Rafer, for being there and saying what you're saying. I appreciate your work immensely. The people have been saying what we saw on film for years and years and years and years. And the people have not been believed. Now we've got video. And if that young man had not had that video, if he tried to say what he saw without the film, he would have been discredited, and probably they would have found a way to criminalize him so that his words meant nothing. Now we have the video. It's next month on May 12th. It will be 5 years since Keaton Otis was executed by the Portland Police Department. He was a very good friend of my son's and was a wonderful young man. But they somehow made him a criminal and mentally ill, to where the racial profiling that caused his murder was dismissed. If there are so many good cops in this country, then they need to stand up right about now and say what they know. And we need to provide with them some kind of a truth and reconciliation format where they can come and say it without fear of being retaliated against. This is a national issue right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so every person who thinks they're running for president of this country needs to be asked the question about this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a national, this number one topic that should be asked of every person who thinks they want to be president of this country.
Agreed.
One other thing we saw in that video was the planting of evidence.
Yes. And again, this is that thing that has been talked about for decades.
How many times has that happened?
Exactly. And the story has been told for decades that, I don't know, I was handcuffed and suddenly the cop dropped that bag of dope by me, right? I mean, that has been told for decades.
No one is believed. Right? Citizens are not believed. The cop's word is taken. That cannot happen anymore.
Right.
We have to stop it. We have to stop it. It's only going to stop with direct action, because legislation hasn't gotten us where we are now. It's action on the ground that's gotten us the consciousness where America is right now. And
right. Well, now it's in their face. We shouldn't even be having to do that. As far as
I know, but that's the only
way
to get it
done. It's in their face right now, and they need to be addressing it. And they need to be asked that question day in and day out. What are you going to do about it?
Hey, Francis, I'm very...
take care.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm really glad that you brought up...
Thanks, Teresa. Thank you.
Francis, I'm really glad you brought up Keaton Otis his murder 5 years ago. This Sunday, the 12th of every month, this Sunday being April 12th, there is a vigil. It's at the site of his murder on 6th and Halsey, and it's 6 to 7 o'clock. Next month, being the 5th anniversary, will be a bigger vigil. This is the regular monthly vigil.
for Keaton Otis. And so people should be aware this is another action that can be taken to show, you know, that you are aware, that you are watching, that you are outraged, and that we are demanding justice. And in this specific case, justice for Keaton Otis. Again, that's Sunday, 6 to 7 p.m., 6th in Halsey, April 12th, like the 12th of every month.
Yeah.
All right.
I have been listening, Teresa, to as much news coverage about this as I can. And one thing that keeps creeping up is this, the issue of the video cams. Now, my first thought is, who's selling the video cams and trying to make make some money about that?
Exactly. But
so they talk about the video cam that was on the car of Slager's car, and that he's out of sight of the video, and it's so
exactly.
We've got to know that it's got to be citizens, and I love that there are people, certain politicians that have said that's it. Well, this is the answer to everything. We'll just get these video cameras. I believe our president was one
more
of them.
Toys.
But yeah, more toys. Who's selling them? That's what I'd like. Where's the lobby for that? And turn them off, turn them on. It doesn't really matter. What did Whoopi Goldberg at one point years ago when I can't remember the guy in L.A. was one of the first things that was people shot
Robinson.
A video. Thank you. Yes. Just said video cams. Don't leave home without them. So your opinion about that, obviously you're sort of giving it, but.
I was going to say I was down in Salem testifying that we don't need the video cams on the officers because we don't have any kind of situation within our policy that will criminalize their actions anyway. So what is the point? And then the people that were there that were fighting for the cams were all officer related. It was all police fraternities, unions, associations, politicians. So I'm looking around the room and I'm like, I don't see any activist organizations here saying that they want to support this. And everything in the language of the bill basically talks about identifying the suspect, finding the extra information on the suspect. It had nothing in there about accountability of the officer. And again, we've done cop watch training. That's the only way to regulate these guys. If they have the cop watch, the camera on their bodies, of course, they can turn it off, they can turn it on. You can see arms moving, you can see trees passing, you might see the ground and their feet running, but you're not getting a specific shot of what's actually happening. You're not getting a 360 degree of what's going on. I mean, come on. You know, in the case of Eric Garner, that film, the guy who was shooting got a felony.
Yeah.
And that was the only clear visuals that you could see of what was happening. Had those cops had those cameras on their uniforms, we would have seen arms and struggle and bodies moving, but we wouldn't have seen a clear projection of what was actually happening. So when I think about body cams, I'm thinking about additional surveillance for the people, you know, for them to survey us, but not for us to have a protection of order against them. There's no laws in place that would criminalize their actions if they did do something wrong to us.
Right.
So what's the freaking point? And we're going to pay for it?
And I want to also just, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what is happening right now with Ramsey Orta. Ramsey Orta is the man that was, that videotaped and released the videotape of Eric mm-hmm. Garner's murder. The police were exonerated in that case, right? They're fine. Eric Garner's dead. Ramsey Orta's in jail.
Yeah.
And there was a GoFundMe or Kickstarter thing. There was a crowdsource funding to raise bail for Orta. And the DA just denied it, saying that that was illegally gathered money. And so Orta remains in jail is denied bail that was crowdsourced from people sharing this outrage across the country that the man actually bringing forth a videotape has been hassled and jailed at this point. So he's been locked up, facing what he described as harassment by local police. This is from Democracy Now! Yesterday. Orta was first arrested on an unrelated gun charge the day after the Staten Island coroner declared Garner's death to be a homicide. He was later arrested and jailed on a drug charge. His mother, his brother, and his wife have all been arrested.
since that time. Supporters have accused the New York City Police Department of targeting Orta's family for releasing the Garner video. I don't know. What do you think? It's
somebody with that much crime against them would not be sitting there filming the police.
You know,
come on.
I mean,
he would have been scared. He would have been afraid. He would have been on the other block, or he would have shared the video to somebody else to put out there. But we are so intimidated and harassed by the police. We don't, you know, I mean, remember the case of Mr. Africa up there in Los Angeles?
Yes.
His girlfriend's still in jail. They gave her a $1 million bail. You know, this is intimidation, and it's being used to criminalize witnesses and bystanders to the point where people will walk on by when they see this happening. They're hoping that we put our cameras away. They're hoping that we'll keep it moving and not make it our business. And that's just sickening. And nobody's standing up against them. I'm still wondering, where are the community leaders? Where are those leaders in New York that could fight to get Orta and his family out? Where are those leaders in Los Angeles that need to be getting that sister out that sat up there and watched her husband or her boyfriend killed? You know, why is she the criminal at this point? And why would the bail be so high? You know, they don't want us to use crowdsourcing to get our political prisoners out of jail. But that's why activists like myself need to build infrastructure so that we can do that. That's what we need to be doing. You know, they're very well organized, but we have to get organized.
Yeah, and crowdsourcing, apparently, that would sort of, create solidarity and actually...
It's a game changer.
Let's go ahead and talk to another caller, 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning to join us. Good morning, Richard. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hey, is Tressa Rayford still there?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to address a request to her, if I could. Is that
You're cool? Doing it right now.
All right. Your Portland Law Collective needs to be solicited for a comment on ORS 153.039. That's a section that prohibits people like the cop that shot Mr. Scott from doing what they did. It says an officer may stop any employee, agent, or representative of a firm, corporation, or other organization if the officer has reasonable grounds to believe that the firm, corporation, or other organization has committed a violation, but not people like Mr. Scott. And that's a big deal.
Okay.
That is a really big deal. If you could ask them.
Thanks, Richard.
What they think about that.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Thanks, Richard.
Can Teresa talk?
Teresa absolutely can't talk. Thank you very much, Richard. We're going to go ahead and let you go. Teresa, do you have any comment?
Absolutely. I will ask them about that. And we do know that to be truthful. That's why we can assert our rights and walk away. But the thing is that the cops, half of the time, their training, like I said, their training evidently includes lying, because they will continue to investigate you once you've even asserted your rights. And what we've learned in our Cop Watch training, and also in the Know Your Rights training that's been provided through, you know, Portland Law Collective, the ACLU, and other entities that have helped us, is that once you assert your rights on the record to the cops, if they continue to harass you, if they arrest you and anything else, when you get into the position to be able to call representation, at least you have something to stand on. This past week in our grand jury training, they said if everybody asserted their rights and the cops continued to harass them and they called us, we would be out of business because we wouldn't have to fight for anything. That's our way of fighting. That's one clear vehicle that is available to us that we can use. But if the cops are out here telling kids don't use it and telling community members, if you want to live, you better not say anything to us that's going to get you killed, then that's just, that's going to be the status quo.
Absolutely.
People
and, you know,
I'm a criminal.
And thinking that the law will take care of everything is one huge piece of denial. And that the authorities will just take care of everything is a huge piece of... If the law worked in all of this, we wouldn't be where we are right now, as you said.
It doesn't work. We wouldn't be fighting for our human rights and dignity if it did.
Right, because on paper, it looks pretty good. Let's go ahead and talk to Emily. 503-231-8187, the number to call here on Positively Revolting, talking about the system of police violence in this country. We're talking with local activist and organizer Teresa Rayford. She works a lot with Don't Shoot Portland, and you just do so much. And I'm just so thankful that you have taken some time this morning to be with us, Teresa.
Well, thank you for considering me happily. I appreciate it.
Oh, pshaw.
Emily, good morning to you. You are on the air.
Good morning. Thanks, Teresa. Thanks, Annie. I was just wondering, what do you think of the feasibility of Don't Shoot Portland crafting model legislation, like ALEC style, that would say that every, and get it on the ballot measure in Oregon and hopefully then push it out to the country, that would say that every single police homicide automatically would go to a jury trial and that officers would be suspended without pay until they were either convicted or exonerated of their charges through that trial, and then only in that instance reinstated to the force and given their back pay for missed time during the trial. What do you think of the feasibility of that idea?
I was going to say, here in Oregon, we're very close. Right now, there are 3 special prosecutor bills that are in Salem, and I went out and testified. I actually took Brad Morgan's family out there with me as well, and we went and testified for the special prosecutor bill that Senator Chip Shields has introduced to the legislature, and it includes a jury by people, because like we learned in our grand jury training this past week, the grand jury is not to benefit the people, period. It benefits the outcomes that the district attorney and prosecutors would like to have against the people, but it's not really a system that works for the general public. So the bill that I supported was 671, I believe, Senate bill, and that bill basically assigns a special prosecutor, but it only covers deadly force issues. I would like to see all criminal behavior attached to these bills. I don't understand why we have cops that are dealing with domestic violence and they're not criminals or theft or rape and assault and intimidation. No one should be above the law. We need to figure out how, I mean, when we talk about reform and all this other stuff and changing the culture, deal with the law in their own backyard. You know, right now they feel like they have authority over the people. We're basically, in people that live in poverty in America, we're second-class citizens. And we are basically tandem to being enslaved on a plantation. And the overseer is the police. And that's just the bottom line. We have to get rid of that overseer mentality out of their system. They need to be accommodated by the criminal system, just like we are.
Thank you very much for your call, Emily. I got to say, personally, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I have absolutely no faith in the jury system, because we have seen juries acquit cops time after time after time, because we still have the myth of the good cop. We still have the myth of protecting and serving.
And not even just that, the language. Mm. When you look at the language, it applies to their actions. Mm-hmm. And it always keeps them okay. It always exonerates them, because the language is in their behalf. It's a funny thing about language. You can write things down and they can look good unless you Google them, unless you start researching them, unless you do your due diligence. And then you'll see that a sentence says something totally different than what you might have a perspective of understanding. And that's how they're getting over on us. When we talk about what happened in Mike Brown's case, they were given the information, and based on the information and the law, which is BS, they had to make the accommodation of a non-indictment. And that's just sickening. The legal system is all messed up. Until the people are just as organized and just as educated about the system, politics, and language, we're not going to have we don't have any kind of equal measure.
Right.
None.
And I think it's important to realize that that's not an accident, right? That the system was not actually set up to empower the people.
Not at all.
I want to remind people you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio in the Morning. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we have with us this morning Teresa Rayford from Don't Shoot Portland. We are talking about the system of police violence. Your calls are invited at 503-231-8187. Please follow us along on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook. We are Positively Revolting. You can also follow along on Twitter, Positive Revolt.
You know, I there's a great article that Teresa Mitchell sent us a couple weeks ago when we were, some time ago, dealing with this about grand juries, Stockholm syndrome, and invisible racism. And I can't remember quite where it came from, but I'm going to put it up on our Facebook page. It's very good, fine, deep reading. And just thought I'd mention that.
All right. Thank you, Lynn.
If I can get it back.
Well, while you're trying to get that back, I'm having a shockwave crash problem myself.
Are you?
But what I was hoping to talk about just for a moment is an article that was posted to Raw Story, and basically it's talking about the fact that more black men were killed last year by police then were killed in the 9/11 events back in 2001. And the article is really quite sobering. I do appreciate how it's written. It is, in fact, referencing killedbypolice.net, which is the website I was mentioning earlier. It's a very bare-bones database that just keeps a count of police shootings as they occur and are reported in mainstream press. So the website started in 2013 and has a complete list for 2014. Based on the count of news stories collected at Killed by the Police, there were at least 238 deaths of black Americans by police in 2014. 238 deaths of black people.
Wow.
In last year by the police. Nationwide. And that's why there's outrage. That is, to say unacceptable puts it in the weakest of terms. That is horrifying. And really, we're watching genocide. And that is why people are outraged. Can we talk for just a moment, Teresa, about what's coming up for Don't Shoot Portland for people that want to get involved, that people want to do something?
Oh, absolutely. Well, like I said, we're all outraged about the Walter Scott situation, but we're also elated that his life was not in vain and that it's given us such an opportunity to call out our officers and the systems around that support their police brutality on the people. And so on Tuesday, we're going to have a protest at 10 a.m. at Multnomah County to basically give community members a chance to call out, because in all of our meetings and a lot of our protests and events, we have so many people talking about different systematic issues that occur around their lives. I mean, through the foster care system, through our education system, through our health care system, the issues that we have with our vets on the streets and with mental health issues and houselessness and everything. And there's a main component. It's like we're all living under this border of poverty, and then the police brutality is what's keeping us there. So we've asked people to come out and speak out against that stuff, because we're not going to end the police brutality until we call out the systems that allow it. Until we pull those systems out and call them out and make them accountable to their action and their working with the police in order to keep this brutality happening within our country, it's not going to end, because they're all servicing each other. I mean, it's like right now in our country, them against us. You have people putting on All Lives Matter shirts just to shut us down and make it seem like we're being racist because we're saying that our lives matter. But in America, and I told a lot of people this, because we know Portland's super diverse, if you live in poverty in America, if you have a handicap, a disability, if there's anything that keeps you from being in the number 1%, then you're black in America. And I'm sorry to tell you that your skin doesn't have to be black for you to be treated like a second-class citizen. But if you are, that is a component of how we feel every single day. And so you have to connect with us so that we can fight this power, because it's going to be inherited by our children. So we're going to have that protest at 10 a.m. at Multnomah County. We're inviting all activist organizations, all community members to come out there. We're going to have people filming it, and we're going to use that as our global voice to basically say we're not accepting this. We will not go through 2015 doing business as usual. This fight is not getting quiet. It's going to get louder. We will turn up. It's springtime. It's almost summertime. It's perfect weather for protesting and doing nonviolent direct action. But at the same time, we are so lucky that the legislative session is in until July. And when I go back and forth to Salem, you wouldn't believe the response. I've told them, I've told different legislators, look, if you don't agree with what we're doing, I'll come out and protest against you. And they're like, well, come on, please. We need you guys out here because people in your community are not saying that these are problems. And so unless we hear from you, we have to do what is being told to us by your leaders. Well, guess what? The people are the leaders. We are the government. And until we take that power back, we're not going to get anywhere. So we're just turning all the way up. It's going to kick off on Tuesday. We have a show on Sunday at Portland Community Media. It's going to be some of our youth that are doing the Know Your Rights Symposium. That'll be kicking off in May. They're doing a pre-show on, and it's going to be called Don't Be a Victim. And it's just covering the whole Know Your Rights issues. They're going to be talking about some of the things that they've been told at school and at church, from police officials, from religious organizations that have told them basically, you know, conform and comply to stay alive. We need to hear those stories. People need to know that they're not going crazy when they have a certain perspective that's not going along with the get along.
So Sunday, that's Portland Community Media. There'll be a show that's being produced by members of Don't Shoot Portland about Know Your Rights. And Tuesday morning, 10 a.m., Multnomah County. That's over by the east end of the Hawthorne Bridge, that building?
Absolutely, yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
And thanks very much for that information. I'm still just rattling around with conform and comply to stay alive. Because
That's
not conforming and complying is a capital offense in this country at this time. All right. Lynn, you look like you're going to jump in and say something.
No, I just want to let people know what else is coming up on KBOO this morning. At 9, we'll hear Economic Update with host Richard Wolf. He talks about the inadequate unemployment insurance, Ted Cruz's campaign money, that'll be interesting, and demonizing the poor. And later in the hour, Wolf interviews Yohai Gal about the worker co-op Tech Collective. Eric Cascadia follows at 10, headlines, interviews, and commentary with host Chris Andre. Stay tuned at 10:15 for Flashpoint, which features an in-depth discussion with AIPAC, the U.S.-based pro-Israel lobby, and commentary from Mike Biggs on the ongoing war on the gay community by the religious right. At 11 o'clock, The Digital Divide presents an exclusive interview with journalist, author, and professor Robert Shear with your host, Rabia Yemen. And thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. As usual, if you're not a member, easy to fix. You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Right now, today.
There's a whole lot of information going on.
Donate now.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, your donations do make programs just like this possible. So it is important to support independent media so that we can keep the truth telling going on that we also need. Let's go ahead and talk to Malcolm. Good morning, Malcolm. Good morning, Malcolm. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes,
we can.
Oh, okay, there we are. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to interject something that's kind of been mentioned in passing often, but isn't really taken into account sometimes when we think about these things, and that's the international nature of the influences in Portland. As a member of Veterans for Peace, I've kind of got my eye out on the international situation, and the pressure to be what Portland's police department is doesn't just come from here. And the people that are running it, our police have trained in Israel and their techniques, the kinds of techniques they use in the West Bank and Gaza. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some kind of mirror in those techniques in the gang task force here in Portland. Now, there are international movements that are supplying. Well, basically, there are local organizations sending supplies to militaries of countries that we don't really necessarily want to support. There's a lot that happens here, and so the influence that we see isn't just local. And I'm really glad to hear that consistently we're talking about this in a global manner, because when you get people from Ferguson and people from Gaza in the same room having a panel, there's a lot of similarity in what they have to say.
Well, it's really the politics of being occupied, isn't it?
Yeah, and are you a veteran?
Yeah, I'm vice president of the Veterans for Peace chapter in Portland right now.
So do you find that a lot of people on the police force are veterans?
Certainly.
And so they've been trained to kill, not to necessarily work things out in the neighborhood.
Well, military training and police training are similar in some ways because the militarized nature of police these days, and that's a problem. It used to be that you weren't trained to act like a soldier in police situations. But as you say, nowadays, running away is a death sentence. That's not policing. That's what happens when you have a military, an area under strict military control.
Right.
And, that was my point.
And I think that, for years we've seen and have actually here on Positively Revolting done programming since the 90s about the militarization of the police force. Mm-hmm. We are seeing conform and comply to stay alive. It's your duty, said in targeted, and I'm using that word advisedly, communities, that it really does look like more of an occupying force and less of a civil service. It looks much more like they are training to, in fact, as Teresa Mitchell says, suppress an insurgency rather than put down crime. So I'm thank you, Malcolm, for your call this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Malcolm.
And we'll all keep working on this. I'll see you Tuesday, Teresa.
Right on.
All right. Thanks, Malcolm. We have 10 minutes left. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Deanna. You're on the air.
Good morning. First of all, thank you so much for this conversation. And boy, I've learned a lot listening to Teresa this morning. Thank you. I wanted to just reiterate what Frances said when she called and add one more thing. And the thing I'm talking about is that it is not any politician that is going to change this. It is we, the people, with direct action, as Teresa said, also, and pressure. And the other thing is, I think there are an awful lot of people who don't think this is their problem. And I disagree with that. This is all our problem,
yes.
Everybody. There are a lot of people who, for whatever their reasons that they tell themselves, think this is someone else's problem. It is not. And I remember when I went to the first Don't Shoot Portland gathering after Ferguson happened, someone there said, these children are all our children.
That's it.
Aren't we all Americans? And then someone said, aren't we all human beings? And that is so true. There is no one who can be saying, this is not my problem. This is all our problem. Every person in this community, as someone said the other day, needs to become an activist in whatever way they find it possible, whether it's going to Salem or whether it's getting in the street. I really believe that. I'm going to be doing that in both counts. And I just can't say enough to anyone who might be listening, who might think this is the people of a certain community, that's their problem, it's terrible, but what can I do about it? You can do plenty. We can all do plenty. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And Deanna's right. If everybody just got together with this, if we all united and just dropped our barriers, dropped our walls and stood together, that is to be reckoned with. That is to be reckoned with. That is the power of the people saying enough is enough. Not us honking horns and getting upset and having this rhetoric on Facebook and social media, but being together on the front line. That's a message that needs to be sent, that we're tired of this. And mm-hmm. just to push our political power to say, look, we'll break this system. That's what's necessary. There's nothing else that's going to happen. We can't mediate this problem away. We can't dialogue it away. We can't heal while it continues to happen. People want to have healing. They want to have discussions. They want to do dialogues. That is not going to work when the problem exists. The house is burning down, so we're going to sit down and talk while we burn?
Right.
That's ridiculous. We have to get out there on the front line, and we have to demonstrate that it's over.
It reminds me...
You can do it.
It reminds me of emergency room triage. We can't get to, how do you want your long-term nutritional health to be when the patient's bleeding to death? Right? I mean, first you really stop the trauma, you stop the immediate harm, you stop the hemorrhage.
Wow, Lynn, it's like we had one brain there for a second. That was cool. All right. So I also want to mention before we wrap up here in just a couple minutes, we talked about being at Don't Shoot Portland, being at the county, Multnomah County building on Tuesday at 10 a.m. We talked about the Keaton Otis Vigil this Sunday, 6 o'clock on 6th and Halsey in Northeast Portland by the Lloyd Center. I also wanted to mention Sabrina Fulton, who is Trayvon Martin's mother, is speaking at the Maranatha Church on Monday evening, and that is expected to fill up to capacity and then some, so advisable to arrive early. Her talk begins about 6:45 on Monday night at the Maranatha Church. So, with that, we just have a few minutes left. Teresa, I guess we do have Dave. We can squeak Dave in for a very quick comment.
Quickly, Dave.
Good morning, Dave.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on what Teresa just said. I am a janitor, quickly, and I had a contract on the Air Force Base. And I went on the Air Force Base here in Portland, and I saw a guy. He looked like he was dressed up for Halloween. I mean, he looked just like Adolf Hitler. I called him out. He was a captain. I called him out. And then later that day, I had two F-16s circling over my apartment. Now, I want to talk about the Ku Klux Klan in every police force in this nation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. I know that it's you know, again, there are so many issues. There's so much outrage. And we have seen so much entrenched and organized racism within police forces across the country. It's a interesting point to end on. Thank you, Dave. Teresa, final thoughts from you.
Well, I just want to say that you've already said that Sabrina Fulton's event is going to be packed. Those same people that go to that event need to be on the front line with us. They need to be there on Sunday. We can leave from Portland Community Media and march down to where Keith Notice was killed because it's right down the street. They need to be with us on Tuesday because their voices matter. Not only their presence when we have a visitor from out of town come out to talk about their tragedy, their voices matter in their city every single day. And what I haven't seen is a lot of them on the front line. Now, it's funny that when the police have a partnership with community members to do something, we show up. Those are the people that we're fighting against. We have to show them our authority as the people against their behavior. It's not saying that we're anti, or we want to destroy them. It's saying that we believe in our own humanity to the point where we will stand and fight for it. So we have to do that together. We have to. We have to make that arrangement to miss school or to ditch work so that that statement is heard. And so that's what we're asking for, that national call of action on April 14th. It's a national call of action. I know that when Cornel West came to Portland, everybody ran to the front line to be a part of that attendance. They need to run to the front line because he's called out this call of action for April 14th, and it is a global call, and we need to be on the front line. And it will be videotaped, so history will show whose side are you on.
Mm-hmm.
When did you use your voice to make it matter? Where were you when people called for you to stand with them? Where were you? You know, so it's a call to action. I want to see everybody out on April 14th at the minimum. You know, at the minimum, be there.
Teresa Rayford from Don't Shoot Portland, thank you so much for joining us here on Positively Revolting. We wish you the best, and we'll be talking with you again, because unfortunately I don't think this problem is going away real soon, but hopefully we can, in fact, start to break this rotten system that is perpetuating it.
Absolutely, and they can find us on Don't Shoot Portland on Facebook. Like the page and share it. Let's get those numbers up. That's still unity.
Thanks so much, Teresa.
Thank you so much, Teresa.
Thank you.
And with that, we are just about to wrap up another rousing episode of Positively Revolting. Again, if you're not outraged, I don't know what to tell you. It's a sickening situation.
But we can keep this discussion going.
We can, and we can do it on Facebook. You can like us there, Positively Revolting. Follow us on Twitter, at Positive Revolt. You can also email us, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. I do want to let listeners know some sad news. For many years, Melody Silverwolf has been a co-host of Positively Revolting. We began the show together in 1994 and co-hosted it for 14 years or so. Melody is in critical condition and is in hospital, and it's, I think, probably fitting in her beliefs, in our beliefs, that listeners that are so inclined can think good thoughts and send some positive, loving energy to Melody Silverwolf, one of our longtime volunteers here at KBOO, who moved out of state last year. But we wish her well, and just wanted to let listeners know, think good thoughts for Melody. All right, thanks very much. We'll be back next week as we talk about renters' issues, renters' rights, and the next summit. Thanks.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KBOO is proud to present a live broadcast of the Inner